This is Classic Poetry Aloud, and this is the second occasional miscellany, following on from the first, 20 episodes ago. We have some snippets of news, and then a few pieces of poetry, too short to warrant an episode in their own right, but I think worth listening to. Firstly, thank you for listening. It's always a delight to see that people throughout the world are listening to Classic Poetry Aloud, and occasionally points of the world jump out at the map at me. I've noticed recently we've had increased traffic from China, somebody coming in from 100 miles northwest of Kathmandu, somebody else from 80 kilometres southeast of Alexandria in Egypt, and somebody from what looked like Merton College in Oxford. To all of you, thank you for listening. Wherever you are in the world, if you've got a comment to make, please do send in a line to classicpoetryaloud@yahoo.co.uk. On the previous occasional miscellany, I thanked many people but omitted to thank the kind people who have taken the time to review Classic Poetry Aloud at blogcatalogue.com. So let me rectify that now and say thank you to Ariana Cherry, to Chiamano, Vera Bass, to Pat and Daniel, Kathleen Maher, Thomas, Redfinger, Staggerly, Peter McCartney, and Laura Butz. Apologies if I haven't pronounced your name correctly. One listener from Michigan suggested that I should add a button enabling listeners to make a donation. I did that, and he then very promptly and very kindly sent a donation in. That button is still on the website, classicpoetryaloud.podomatic.com. A quick notice of something that's coming up in a couple of weeks' time. We're having a special week-long look at war poetry to coincide with Remembrance Week, the week leading up to the 11th of November. In the UK, on the 11th of November, people traditionally will pause for 2 minutes at 11 o'clock in the morning, which is the exact time on that day that the Declaration of Peace was signed at the end of the First World War in 1918. So my aim is to build 7 poets over 7 days up to that point. There will be poetry you expect: Lawrence Binyon, Wilfred Owen, Rupert Brooke, possibly also some you might not expect, from Catherine Mansfield and also from Coleridge. I hope you'll be able to join us in that week to take the time to listen, and perhaps also take some time on the Sunday to reflect on where the poems have led you to that week. Now, on a slightly brighter note, in the last occasional miscellany, we had a poem about a fat white woman seen from a train. I don't know if you remember this one. Let me just quickly recite it to you, because I discovered, having read that afterwards, that a rejoinder was written by British humorist G.K. Chesterton. Let me give you the poem first, and then the rejoinder. To a Fat Lady Seen from the Train, by Francis Cornford. Oh, why do you walk through the fields in gloves, missing so much and so much? Oh, fat white woman whom nobody loves, why do you walk through the fields in gloves, when the grass is soft as the breasts of doves, and shivering sweet to the touch? Oh, why do you walk through the fields in gloves, missing so much and so much? G.K. Chesterton wrote this rejoinder: The Fat White Woman Speaks, which is a marvellous title. Why do you rush through the field in trains, guessing so much and so much? Why do you flash through the flowery meads, fat-headed poet that nobody reads? And why do you know such a frightful lot about people in gloves as such? And how the devil can you be sure, guessing so much and so much, how do you know but what someone who loves always to see me in nice white gloves at the end of the field you are rushing by is waiting for his old Dutch? My old Dutch is a term commonly used for somebody's wife in Britain, and I think G.K. Chesterton there really sticks up for the fat white woman and gives her a voice which she perhaps was missing. And it made me think perhaps we should have some other poetry of argument or rejoinder, and a couple of bits sprung out to mind. The first was a famous argument in philosophy about idealism and materialism, I think put forward by Bishop Berkeley in the 18th century, where the classic question is, if a tree fell over in a forest, would it make a sound if there was nobody there to hear the sound? And that was expressed very nicely in two limericks by Ronald Knox. There once was a man who said, God must think it exceedingly odd if he finds that this tree continues to be when there's no one about in the quad. A quad, of course, is a square at the centre of a quadrangle typically in a college. And here is the reply that Knox writes. Dear sir, your astonishment's odd. I am always about in the quad, and that's why the tree will continue to be since observed by, yours faithfully, God. And I love this idea of God taking the time to reply in limerick form to this perhaps slightly idealistic young man who has first formed this thought. Another couple of poems, epigrams really, concern some physicists. Physicists don't get much of an airing of poetry, let's give them a chance. Alexander Pope was delighted with Newton's clear view of the world and penned this. Nature and nature's laws lay hid in night. God said, let Newton be, and all was light. Of course, that's a reference to fiat lux, let there be light in Genesis. But J.C. Squire, in the 20th century, replied thus. It did not last. The devil howling, ho, let Einstein be, restored the status quo. Which is a bit harsh on Einstein. He did a fantastic job explaining the universe, and yet, Squire's right, his views on the theory of relativity, I think to most of us, are pretty obscure. One last couple of quatrains for us. And this is not a contradiction or an argument between two people, but within one person. The first is quite a famous set of four lines by Edna St. Vincent Millay, and I love it for the idea of this idea of burning with a hard, gem-like flame, as the authors at the beginning of the century used to write, beginning of the last century. My candle burns at both ends, it will not last the night, but ah, my foes, and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light. I think we all love this idea of being the romantic, living the life to the full. But she also wrote this little ditty called Grown Up. Was it for this I uttered prayers, and sobbed, and cursed, and kicked the stairs, that now, domestic as a plate, I should retire at 8:30? I think anybody who's ever had children will know what happens to your evenings after that, and I can feel for Edna St. Vincent Millay as she transforms from this romantic character living life to the full to someone who's just desperate to get upstairs to bed sometimes. I've enjoyed this occasional miscellany. I hope you have too, and until we next meet, I hope you'll enjoy listening to Classic Poetry Aloud.